that's incredible. That's one of the nicest things I've ever had anybody say to me, Robert. I really appreciate that. And I hope that you finding it enjoyable reading, Robert, over.
To learn something new. So I actually started reading about this because I know absolutely nothing about it. I'm currently a therapist, but I've been a lawyer and banker and stuff. And so this is a new thing. But after listening to everything you've done this year, sitting there in the marsh, I actually picked up a couple of books. And I'm now starting to learn about how it actually works. So it was a great conversation that you had with that fellow. And I enjoyed listening to all of it. So don't want to interrupt you. It's Rob here in Fort Lauderdale, W1ZY, K2 Alpha, Bravo, Bravo. Good evening.
All right, that's really gratifying to hear, Robert. Did you notice a difference when I flipped the antennas down to you, Robert? Over.
Actually, I heard when you moved away. I was obviously in the back end of it, but the propagation, because I'm right here in the propagation here is so great, I can just kind of pick you up as I think it bounces along the ocean. Over.
Yeah, it's we're pretty close, and there's a high angle component that probably doesn't have as much of a difference, possibly. But I hope that you will continue. I hope that's enjoyable reading for you. I find it fascinating. I read those things. Some of them are way over my head. They get too technical. But I do like to find stuff written about the antennas that's right at my level of comprehension. So I can understand it, but I just find it fascinating myself. If I'm in a situation where I can't put an antenna up, then I just like to read about it, and I live vicariously by reading about it. And I love hearing other people's experiences with the different antennas when they describe it with some detail, not just how many countries they work, but what they did and how they got around problems and such. I think it's fascinating. Hey, 73, thanks for the kind words. K2 Alpha Bravo Bravo W1 ZY.
Actually, I got into this, just so you know, I'm 77. And I got into this, as a kid, and then got back into it because I'm involved in the Red Cross and they needed more operators for Puerto Rico. But more than that, a lot of people come in to me and they think they can't learn anymore. So 2 years ago, I thought, okay, I'll see if I can do this again. And I got back into the ham thing just to see if I could do it. And went up and got, you know, the three levels of licenses in, you know, over 60 days just to see if you can do it. So beyond everything else, and now it is just to challenge oneself to make sure you can still do it, and you can. So there you go. Thank you very much. 73. Good evening. Bye-bye.
All righty. Very good. Yes, you can, as the expression goes. When I came to this marsh here 6 months ago, I wanted to see if I could do it here because I heard all about it. It would be the final grand finale of all these radio experiments, these vertical experiments. And it was fun starting off. I remember it. I think about it sometimes. In the beginning, putting the one vertical up on the deck and then moving the other vertical out to the marsh and then moving the other one out, doing all the testing. And it was a lot of fun, especially gluing the cable straps onto the PVC tubes for the guys. So that was a fun part. I enjoyed that. That was a good one. I couldn't figure out what to do, and I said, well, let me just try this. Hey, it's 73s, and thank you so much. We'll talk again if you're not too busy reading, Robert. Kilo 2, Alpha Bravo Bravo, W1 ZY.
73.
Looking back into Europe, W1ZY, calling CQ, checking out the propagation into Europe, W1ZY. Looking into Europe. W1 Zanzibar, Yokohama. W1ZY.
W1 Zanzibar, Yokohama. Calling CQ into Europe. CQDX Europe. W1 Zanzibar, Yokohama. W1 Zulu Yankee. Calling CQ Europe. W1 Zanzibar, Yokohama. Looking into Europe. Calling CQ.
Anybody.
Radio Kilowatt.
The Ontario Kilowatt?
Yes, Radio Lima 3, Russia London 3, Ontario Kilowatt. Over, over.
Radio Lima 3, Oscar Kilo. W1 Zulu Yankee. You're 59, 5 and 9. Beautiful signal. My name is Bill. Bravo, India, Lima Lima. Beautiful signal. Radio Kilo, Radio Lima 3, Oscar Kilo, W1 Zulu Yankee, over.
Over, over. W1 Zulu Yankee, Radio Lima 3, Ontario Kilo, view. Good afternoon, your report 5757, my name Victor.
QSL Victor, thank you for the 57. You are 59, a beautiful signal into Rhode Island. Radio Italy, Rhode Island, my QTH. And we're running about 500 watts. The antenna is 2 verticals. And again, beautiful copy. Radio Lima 3, Oscar Kilo, W1 Zulu Yankee, over.
Over, over. My QTH, Voronezh, Voronezh. 800 kilometers south from Moscow, capital hall, QSL.
100 kilometers south of Moscow. Voronezh. Beautiful. Beautiful sounding. 73s. And thank you for the QSO. Pasiba for the QSO. And a beautiful signal. Radio Lima 3, Oscar Kilo. W1 Zulu Yankee. 73.
73, Bill.
Good evening, Bill, my friend. And no problem. And
United Romeo 5, Victoria, Florida, San Diego. Over.
United Radio 5, Victor Fox Sugar, W1 said Y 59 plus 5, so far. Beautiful signal, that's Saturday, over.
Roger, Roger, Bill, and no problem, and 59 plus 15 dBm, this is Thomas. My God, your signal. Good evening, Bill, thank you, and you so thank you, contact.
All right, you are the big signal. You are the big signal tonight, Sadekay. 59 plus 5. Beautiful. 73s, dos fidanya.
Bye bye, Bill. Thank you.
Beautiful Alinko. CQ, W1, said what? Who is that? I think it's a Radio Kilo 3. Radio Kilo 3. No copy, no copy, unfortunately. W1 Zulu Yankee standing by. Is there a United Victor 4? A United Victor 4? No copy, W1ZY, calling CQ.
Victor Echo 1, Papa Kilo.
No copy on the Russians. W1 Zulu Yankee, Victor Echo 1, Papa Kilo. W1ZY, good to hear you coming in. You're 59, and we'll take another look at the meter. My name is Bill, Bravo, India, Lima, Lima, over.
Well, good evening, Bill. Couldn't let you go calling without at least saying hi. 59 plus 25 here in Halifax. Name is Pat, Papa Alpha Tango. QSO.
Roger, Pat. Incredible. Yeah, you're 10 over 9 here. Beautiful copy. And we're just checking out the propagation here after returning home from the laundromat. We put the clothes into the dryer and ran back home. And then went back after Grayline came in. But really nice conditions. There's some powerful signals coming in from Russia and then also into Europe. But I guess everyone's asleep naturally, which is to be expected. But just a fantastic propagation. We're running an old TS-830, about 500 watts. And we have two verticals that are phased. We're in a salt marsh here right on the coast, southern coast of Rhode Island. VE1 Papa Kilo, W1ZY.
W1ZY from VE1PK. Hey, a great signal still coming in there, Bill. I've actually looked at your vertical antenna set up there on QRZ, and it's a quite interesting read. Very interesting setup you've got there. I'm just running an Icon 7300, 100 watts out of a multiband vertical. On the fence in the backyard, it's only about 10 feet to the bottom of the antenna before it goes another 27 feet tall. Running a Comet CHA-250 multi-band vertical, set a 14-to-1 balun at the bottom of the antenna. Mostly designed for those of us who can't really put up anything extravagant or overly visible, so it blends in really nice with the fence post in the backyard. Anyway, I heard you calling, thought I'd at least say hi, say good evening, and I'll let you get back to shouting over the pole over my head, so to speak. I'll say 7-3, ZE1TK.
All right, very good, Pat. And the antenna's working very nicely here. It's great for this particular skip. Coming in quite nicely, and it's not a problem at all hearing you without any question, rather loud. 73, see you up there. I hope it's getting warm, and we'll hopefully hear you again soon. Victor Echo 1, Papa Kilo, W1, Z1. 73,
who's that?
Okay, so it's
the hotel
in
Mexico, just in case
the
name here is Young. Yeah, how
are
you doing?
Go ahead.
Hey,
is that Young?
Roger.
I remember, I've had many contacts, a few contacts with you. VE3HLM, W1 said, why you're about 30 over 9 into Rhode Island, very, very loud this evening, over.
Yeah, Roger, you're also very strong in here. I heard you also last night about the same strength. Much amazed, you know, how well you can receive all that European as well as the Australian. I can barely copy them, but what a difference. I'm not sure whether it's the location or the antenna or maybe both combination, I suspect. Anyway, I had a few questions about the conditions that you're running. Is that the salt water or the brackish water? Over.
It's salt water. It's a tidal marsh, Young. So it comes in twice a day and swamps it, and then it recedes out through a channel that goes out to the ocean. Over.
Yeah, Roger. Is there any differences in performance between the tide in and out?
That is a good question, and right now I have elevated the radials about a foot and a half or 2 feet to try to get them to all submerge at the same time when the water comes up. I wanted to see if the 1 to 3 inches, get them submerged at 1 to 3 inches to see if there's a difference. I have two examples so far that I recorded of very odd conditions. One was at Grayline at the high tide, and the other one was Grayline for a New Zealand station in the evening with some big signal reports. But I don't have any indication that there is, although I'm trying to find out. Over.
Yeah, well, anyway, the salt water, I guess even if the water's not there, but the the base would be highly conductive, I suspect. I often wondered about what I can make the good grounding system on my location in here, but I guess you have a natural conditions working for you. What's your next plan? Do you by any chance planning to put Foursquare over?
Negative. We're just trying this, I call it the skin effect experiment, to see about the water level. What happens if you can get the return currents or the far field completely linked to the return currents, the near field. But that's the big thing that I'm trying right now, and I have to wait for the moments when the tide comes in. I have my QRZ page. I have the live chart for the tides, so even I can check at night. I can't really tell. I can look out the window and I can say, I think about right now it's probably coming in. It might even be high tide right now. But no Foursquare or anything else. I wouldn't want to narrow the lobes and get nulls in the coverage. The two verticals provide the good coverage. The big advantage is the low angle. The takeoff angle is very low. It's in the single digits. So that's the big advantage to the location. It's not the antennas, young, I don't think. VE3HLM W1ZY.
Yeah, okay. I guess you're more focused on the getting the base fact established, which is a very good plan, in my opinion. I guess in your situation, the takeoff angle would be almost under 0 degrees without suffering a great deal of attenuation. Yeah, I guess it's quite contrasting. In my situation, when I approach to something like 5 degree angle, I'm going to lose about 10 dB compared to about 45 degree takeoff angle. So you definitely would have a big edge about your vertical antenna, I suppose. But I guess your pattern would be somewhat broad, I suppose. So you might have a very sharp null point, but I guess that's a typical two-element vertical characteristic, right?
Yep, for the way that I have it set up, two quarter wave verticals spaced a quarter wave and a phased 90 degrees, it will give the big dramatic cutoff in the back and then spread that energy 3 dB across the forward lobe, which is basically a half a circle. I think it's 150 degrees. It's very broad, maybe 140 degrees. And I'm just particularly interested in, I've been collecting information about these phase verticals, as you might remember from years ago, a couple years ago. I had these antennas set up in the woods, and then I got an opportunity to use this location. So I've just been collecting data and making recordings and such, because I would like to put it into a book about the phase verticals. So I have two installations, one with the elevated counterpoise documented, and then this one, which is the ultimate environment for the verticals. But you're right. I think that one engineer told me, I think it was a model, or he just told me from his professional experience, that the takeoff is about 5 to 7 degrees. And so that, I guess, would mean that half the energy is below that. Then we hit the pseudo-Brewster angle, which I don't know what it is on 40. It might be 1 degree or 1/10 of a degree or something. But the salt marsh here extends all the way to the ocean, which is about 0.4 miles to my south and 2 miles to my east. So it's all the southern coast of Rhode Island is all marshes and tidal flushing marshes. Young. So I think it's the a very good location for this experiment, and we just want to see how they perform, and particularly trying to find out if the impedance changes with the water as it gets deeper and deeper. The radials go down. I've had them down as far as 3.5 feet under the salt water, and then above the salt water, and then as they enter. I think the skin effect, I think Rudy Severance wrote a paper saying the skin effect is about 1 to 3 inches. So right now I have, I'm trying to get all of the radials level and at the same height, so that when the water comes in, they all go under at the same time, and to see if that makes a difference. And then also experiment with the capacitive coupling to salt water. So other people using verticals for contests, let's say, they have a choice between putting the radials in the water or putting the vertical above the water and putting the capacitively coupled, especially when there's waves. There's no waves here when the water comes in, so I have an advantage, but I think that it would be, I want to find out if it is good to have it capacitively coupled rather than touching or deep inside the water, deep under the water. These are all like the classic questions. I have a lot of documentation, more than anyone would ever want, up on QRZ page. I've been doing it for about 6 months. We did some interesting experiments in the beginning. We had 4 ground rods and then a radial system on 1 vertical, and we switched them back and forth with a relay. And the local station said that made no difference, but the DX stations on the same frequency at the same time said it was 1 to 3 S units, suggesting the lower elevation envelope of the vertical was dependent upon a radial system, whereas the higher a part of the envelope was the same with the ground rods. Other interesting things like that, you could get me, I could talk for, I apologize for the long transmission, but it's, I've been interested in this stuff, young, as you can understand. VE3HLMW1, said what?
WA3RWP.
Okay, a young QSB, the band changed. I talked it out. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Maybe we talk again in the middle of the day sometime. 73's VE3HLM, W1, said what?
Okay, 72. W1ZY, Whiskey Alpha 3, Romeo Whiskey Papa.
Whiskey Alpha 3, Radio Whiskey Papa, W1 Zulu Yankee, very loud here into Rhode Island. Go ahead, over.
Okay, thank you very much. Good evening to you. Name here is Wally, and I'm located in Williamsburg, Virginia. You also have a very, very nice signal here. You're 5 and 9, plus about 5. I just happened to tune across your very nice signal and was just listening the last maybe 4 or 5 minutes, but I was listening long enough that I think you can answer a question for me. I'm living in a situation where you would never put yourself into, I'm sure. We have an HOA here, and so there are antenna restrictions. And we're trying to get your input on the ground radios. I'm using the an antenna by a company named 05 Antennas, and it is short because I had to be short for HOA restrictions. So it's only 27 feet tall, so it's not even a quarter wave like on 40 or anything else. But my question is the ground radio system. I know that the more ground radios I can put out, the better. But the question is, the way my property is set up, I will not be able to put a perfect, like a circle of ground radios around the base D antenna. So have you had any experience or information as to what will be the effect if I could just put a semicircle worth radios up. And do you have any opinions on whether the radio should be a quarter wavelength on a particular frequencies or bands of interest? Or should it be, for example, in my case, the antenna is only 27 feet long. So should it be 27-foot radio or a what? So just curious. W1ZY, and if you keep my your name also, I appreciate it. WA3RWP.
Okay, WA3RWP, W1ZY, hello, Wally. I think that when you put the ground radios onto the ground or in the ground, that they are not tuned. They're not like counterpoise wires anymore. So the longer the better, because you'll collect more of the return currents. But the on some of the studies that people have done, and they're saying with a certain amount of wire, a certain investment of wire, is it better to put a lot of short ones or a lot of long or a few long ones and so forth? They point out that as the radios go away from the vertical, they get further and further apart naturally. They're like the spokes of a wheel, so they get less coverage. So there's a point where, with practical considerations, if you put out long ones, it's good to put out a lot of long ones. But basically, in my own opinion, you want to saturate the base of the antenna with as much as many radios as you can get out, no matter how long they are. You want to. That's where a lot of the return currents are very close to the bottom of the antenna. And that's a controversial thing to say, because a lot of manufacturers and studies say that doesn't matter if you have a lot of long ones out, which is probably true. But if you're limited in what you can do, if you have a vertical and you think you can only get out nice long ones for a semicircle because the antenna is like 5 feet away from a fence and you can't put any radios in that area, I would say put a bunch of radios in that area anyway. Or, ultimately, some people put down chicken wire or a mesh, some kind of a screen or a mesh. The objective of the ground radios is complete the circuit. The energy comes off the radiator, and then it's got to make its way back to the shield of the coax, essentially. And immediately surrounding the antenna in the near field, which is about a quarter to a half wavelength, the ground radio wires, all they do is collect that current and bring it back. And if they aren't able to do it 100% efficiently, then you start losing radiated power. It starts going away as heat. It's like putting a resistor in the return path. Not all of it gets back to the coax. So it reduces the amount of energy that you transmit out to the far field, which is where the pattern gets formed. So you want to put out as many radios as you can. You don't care about the resonance of them. It's nice to get a quarter wavelength or longer if you can. But if they're buried in the ground or on the ground, just put out as many as you can fit into your yard, I think, Wally, over.
Okay. You've answered the question for me. You gave the story about a fence being close. But yes, it's not necessarily a fence, but it's my house that would limit me in one direction. So I will keep that idea in mind, because I don't have anywhere near the distance to run long wires for radios. But as you've mentioned, it puts out as many as I can, even if they are short in that direction anyway. So that's something I'll have to do. Do you agree with using, I'm thinking about using insulated? I have some, right now I have on about, I've got to have down 15 wires right now. And the wires are about 30, between 25 and 33 feet long right now. And I have about 15 wires down now. So I have room for more. And of course, like I said, they're down right now in a semicircle. Because in fact, the other direction, or the other half of that circle, would be running the wires towards the house, and then and that distance is much shorter. So I thought that I would not run those, since they didn't have the length, anywhere near the length that I thought I would need. But based on what you just said, it still would help He was there short to complete the semi, to complete the other half of the circle. And could you give me the name again, please? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. My name is Bill Bravo, India Lima Lima. And the area immediately around the bottom of the vertical is like the filet mignon. That's where a lot, there's a lot of current down there that you want to grab, Wally, over.
I like that. That's the first time I heard that description of filet mignon with radio. I'm going to remember that, Bill. Go ahead.
Yep, definitely. If he can fit them in, grab it. You know, might as well get it. There's no reason to not... If you imagine, like, the ultimate vertical, which is, like, the vertical, it's got 120, what, I guess, quarter wave radials, like the engineering book says. And then you imagine looking down on the antenna and only looking 8 feet out or 10 feet out around it. And you have 120 radials that are, like, you know, 8 or 10 feet long, no matter how, well, whatever the distance is that you're looking. That's a lot of saturation. That's a lot of radial coverage. And that's collecting a lot of current. And then imagine in your mind saying, well, I'm going to take half those radials, even though they extend, they're 120 quarter wave radials, but I'm going to take out half of them, because I can only get them out 8 feet. That's a lot of area, where there's a lot of return currents that want to go back to the coax that you're not covering. So just because you can't put them way out, it's not like a dipole. If they're on the ground, it's not like a dipole. You want to grab all the current around the base of the antenna. And I did an experiment here where I put a vertical out in the marsh and I had 4 ground rods, and it has really good conductivity because the water floods them. It completely floods the marsh up to 4 feet. But we did that. We put the ground rods out, and then we also then put a radio field of 30 quarter wave radials. And then I put a relay at the bottom of the antenna, Wally, and I switched back and forth between the ground rods and the radials. And the DX station said it made a huge difference. And the local stateside station said there was no difference when it went between the two. And I think that what that suggested is that the radial field is important for developing the lower angle envelope of the vertical in the far field, in the surrounding terrain. Whereas the ground rods, it looked to me at least, with a very nice conductive ground, was sufficient to develop a nice upper envelope. The higher angles were fully developed, but the lower angles were suffering. So I think that if you only put them in a semicircle, you might get some really good lower angle, you might get better low angle development than in the area where you don't have them as long, Wally, over.
Okay, yeah, Bill, as you described, that test that you did, I thought the same thing, that area where I have the ground radios now would probably give me better DX capabilities or low angle radiation in that direction where the ground radios are currently installed. And in my case, the semicircle of ground radios is towards the water. There's a small pond that goes past my property. And so the radios that are currently down are all in that direction. They all lead towards the water. I'd even contemplated one time, although I have not done that, to see what would happen if I was to actually let some of those radios droop into the water. But again, as I said, there is an HOA here, and so the last thing I wanted to have is for the folks to be cutting the grass out there in the area which is not my property, and then coming across my radio system. Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, that would not be good for your overall propagation if they discovered that was the case, Wally. So not a good idea. And again, if you if it's a pond, if it's not a saltwater pond, if it's not very big, it's not going to make much difference. The only thing that you're going to be able to do with the radials, the only objective is to get the efficiency, to get the vertical to radiate efficiently. You put 100 watts in, you get 100 watts out for 100% efficiency. And that comes down to how much of the energy that comes off the vertical makes its way back to the shield, essentially. And then after that, in the area on 40 meters, on the area that surrounds the antenna, extending out many, many wavelengths, that determines what actually ends up developing in terms of the elevation, the elevation angles, and the low pattern, the low elevation response, and so forth. So you can't do anything too much about that. The only thing that you can do with the radials is to try to collect that current. Most of it is close to the vertical. So there's no advantage to like tying the end of some radials to a fence or dipping them into the saltwater canal or anything like that. And it's not going to lower your takeoff angle. It's all that's determined by all that terrain outside in the outlying area. But all you're trying to do is get as efficient a radiator as possible to deliver that energy out to that far field. So if you put 100 watts in, you don't want to end up with like 25 out. That's like a waste. And if you do it properly with a quarter wave vertical, the way it works out is that the you can tell because when you look at the feed point impedance with a antenna analyzer without a long piece of coax, like right at the base, it'll approach 36 ohms. And when you hit 36 ohms, that means that you have you've achieved the you've eliminated your ground losses essentially. And the antenna will be theoretically 100% efficient, but that's difficult to achieve. You could do it with a lot of radials, but they need to go out, you know, in all directions and so forth. But if you don't have that, then you want to get as close to that as possible. Reason why I mention that, because some people will put up a vertical, they'll put out like 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 radials, and they'll say, I got a 1-to-1 SWR, which means for a quarter wave vertical that it's 50 ohms. And that's about 14 ohms of loss. So you can do a calculation to determine what the efficiency is. So if you're putting up a quarter wave vertical, you put out the radials on the ground, and you get a 1.3-to-1 SWR. That's an indication that you're doing a good thing. That's you want to try to target that. That'll tell you that you're getting to the right feed point impedance that naturally occurs when you've eliminated all the ground losses. I don't think putting salt on the ground or freshwater lakes or anything like that, I don't think that really has too much of a effect on the performance of the vertical. All you want to do is collect all that current and get it back to the coax, essentially, Wally. So pretty simple. It's not like grounding something, like an electrical entrance or anything. It's a different type of thing. Whiskey, oh, my computer just... Whiskey Alpha 3 Radio Whiskey Papa W1 ZY.
Yeah, W1 ZY. Excuse me. It's WA3RWP. Okay, Bill, I appreciate the information. I've taken down a few notes. One thing that you said of interest was that if I made a measurement at the base of the antenna, I'm actually looking for something like 36 ohms, which is half of what I would have expected. It was around 70 ohms or so is what's supposed to be the impedance of a half wave dipole. So I guess a quarter wave would be 36 ohms. That's where you're getting that from?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Okay. Very good. So I will keep that in mind. I have an antenna analyzer. And I will be taking that with me and making some antenna measurements, some additional ones, which are long overdue. As I mentioned at the beginning of the contact, the antenna I'm using is a 05 antenna, and it's appropriately named. It's a model HOA-27, Hotel Oscar Alpha 27, designed for people like me with HOA regulations and restrictions. And it is only 27 feet tall. But they recommend that you run it with at least 100. They recommend you run it with 110 feet of coax. And of course, that makes me believe that the coax is what makes the thing, quote unquote, work. Because the antenna is definitely not resonant. Even for 27 feet, this still isn't the best SWR I can measure. Here is something like around 1.7 or so, 1.8-to-1. But of course, that's not within any of the amateur bands. Bill, go ahead.
Oh, okay. And this is a multi. By the way, I love the 05 guys. I love those guys. I have admired some of the antennas that they've put out, including their shortened vertical dipoles. Are pretty awesome. Those guys are awesome. Is this a multi-band antenna, Wally?
Yeah, it is. It's 40 through 10 meters. 40 through 10. It is HOA-27 is the model number. And it's multi-band. There are no traps or anything on it. It has what they call their un-balun at the base of the antenna. Go ahead.
Okay, they're loading that. All right, and when you take your analyzer, the point where you want to read the feed point impedance is where the antenna is resonant, where the reactance goes down to zero. Are you aware of that?
No, I was not.
Yeah, you want to. The reactance is telling you where the antenna is resonant, where it's resonating, and that's a function of its length. And other things that, you know, the radials will tune it to a certain frequency. But yeah, where you watch the reactive component, forget the feed point impedance, just watch the reactive component and it'll go down. It may not go down to zero, but it will reach a minimum point. And that's the point of resonance, and that's the point that you want to look at what the feed point impedance is. To get to where the antenna is resonating is where you're really interested in knowing what the feed point impedance is, Wally, over.
Okay, let me make sure I understand that, Bill. So in other words, this analyzer that I have, it will give you, you know, R plus or minus the imaginary component. So the reactance, I thought I was looking for was that it was like no reactance, that it was acting as a pure resistive load. But what you're saying is I should be looking on my analyzer for where the reactance is at its lowest point, and then see what the what the resistance of that point is, and that would tell me where the antenna is actually resonant.
That's correct, and that's exactly what you said. In other words, in my mind, you just reworded what you had, what you thought to be true. In other words, when the reactance goes down to zero, that's the perfect case. Just as you know, as you indicated. But sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes there's a component left. So when you sweep the antenna, you turn the frequency dial on the analyzer, or if it plots it, it's even better. It'll plot it. It'll sweep it and give you a graph. I only have the MFJ one, so I have to turn the dial and watch the reactive component until I can find it getting to minimum, and then I go back and forth on the resonance knob until I get it right down to the minimum point. Sometimes it's zero. Sometimes it's 3 ohms, 2 ohms. If I do a good job, and then I look at the feed point impedance, because I want to know what's the feed point impedance at resonance, which is a zero reactance, or in the real world, sometimes it's 2 or 3 ohms, Wally, over.
Okay, good. So I will keep that in mind, and I have the Comet antenna analyzer, the CA500, and it will allow me to do a plot. In addition to, you know, I can do a point-by-point test, too, but that was one of the things that drew me to it, is that it will allow me to sweep the antenna, and it'll give me a nice plot of it. So, as you indicate, I'll look for that point where the reactance, it reaches its lowest point, and at that point, I'll see what the ohmic resistance is at that point, and therefore, where the resonant frequency for that antenna is. This is WA3RWP.
All right, sounds good. And I do hope to send you for. I hope you send me an email and tell me what happens, over.
Okay, is your email on QRZ.com?
Yes, it is. And it's also my call sign, W1ZY, at yahoo.com.
Okay, I'm writing that down as I speak. Okay, I've got you. And I never did get you. Are you in Boston? I was going to combine the word Boston and Massachusetts and Massachusetts. But are you near Boston? Did I hear that correct earlier on?
I'm in southern Rhode Island, right on the coast, about 70 miles south of Boston.
Okay, I've got that down. And yeah, I will. I'll let you know how that all works out. And. This has been a challenge for me. the entire situation, that is. We moved here about 5 years ago now, after living in Maryland. And in Maryland, I had a tower, and I had a tri-bander, and all kinds of goodies up on a crank-up 55-foot tower. And actually, I thought my HF days were over. I was finished with it. There was a very bad hurricane that was scheduled to come through there in Maryland, and so I lowered the antenna down, the tower down, and there it stayed for the next 7 years. And I never did raise it back up again, and you couldn't even, I could not even get to the radio, to the controls, to the knobs, or anything else, because there was so much other junk that I collected in front of the radio in the shack. And so when we were looking for a place in which to move for retirement, I wasn't, in the past, every location I looked for a home was always with radio in mind. You know, no overhead power lines, no noisy areas, absolutely no antenna restrictions. But being that I had been off HF for at that point about 8 or 10 years before we started looking for a house here, well, anywhere at that point, I hadn't really decided where we would move. The antenna restriction didn't, never even came to my mind. Oh, I did ask, just out of curiosity, from the realtor, were there any antenna restrictions, and she told me that yes, there were, but I said, okay. It didn't bother me at that point. But sure enough, after being here for about a year or so, I got involved with a local radio club, and then I got involved with a contest, an HF contest with the radio club, and that's when the interest was rekindled. And I